We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second? Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
I do want to switch gears a little bit, Nick, and talk about your journey. You know, we were talking and you mentioned you've had your own firm for about 13 years now, right? Mm-hmm. Roughly 13
yeah.
years now. So just talk to us about that and just like why you decided to go out on your own and just like the specialties at your firm, how those things develop. Because I mean, we don't really see a lot of Black businesses lasting that long. I mean, this, I don't know the statistics, but a lot of businesses go out of business pretty quickly, mm-hmm. like a year or two or something like that. So we'd love to hear just more about that.
Yeah, so it was always a plan, but it did not go at all how I had planned it.
Yeah.
So I graduated law school in 2009. Mm. So the economy's kind of tanking then. And so typically in law school, your first summer, you often work for free. Your second summer, you work and you get paid. And your that summer is kind of like a long interview to get it, have them offer you a job at the when you graduate. And so I did that and was working at a in-house at a company. And they said, yeah, we love you. You're great. We'd love to have you come back. We'll, you know, touch bases more in the wintertime to really see what it looks like. And basically, this is a side note to that. Actually, I remember I made a good amount of money that summer and I was living with my sister. So I just pocketed all of it. And so I was like, let me be responsible, invest in the stock market. And so I invested like $10,000 and literally like a month later, it was like $3,000 because the market had just, and these were like blue chip, like stocks supposedly, but that's an aside. So anyway, but that kind of shows what was going on in the economy. So I stopped working there a month later, economy's tanking. And so when winter comes, they said, oh yeah, you know, the business had to reorganize and our office isn't going to be here and we're all getting split up. Some of us are getting laid off or let go. So sorry, basically. And so I was like, great, well, I'm graduating and I guess I got to figure out what I'm going to do now. And so it had been my plan to, you know, work at a firm or business 2 or 3 years and then start my own. That's what I wanted to do. So I graduated, didn't have a job. I'm applying for jobs that I didn't really want. I'm competing with lawyers that were 2 or 3 years senior because they had also gotten laid off because of the economy. And just, yeah, I wasn't really happy with that. I lucked out kind of temporarily. A friend of mine in law school, they needed her tax consulting firm needed some help. So I was doing that kind of on a project basis. I might like work like maybe a week a month, but at least kept me fed and things like that. And I remember during all that time, I was like, okay, well, I'm at home all day, so I'm not going to just sit here. I'm going to be, you know, building into myself. So I was, you know, building a business plan for the firm. I was reading practice guides, just kind of learning more about the practice of law, kind of just getting ready for whenever that time might come. And so I had a project I worked with them in New York. I ended up being there for about a month. And it's great. They like I stayed at the I lived at the W in Midtown for a month. And it's sweet too. Like I had a bedroom, a living room. Like it was dope.
Sheesh.
So they paid me well. I was living it up. And I'm like, this is great. But I saw, you know, how much they were paying for me to stay there, how much they're paying me versus how much the company itself actually made. And I just like, man, they weren't even here and they're making way more than I thought I was getting broke off, but I'm getting pennies compared to what they're getting. And so that's kind of what motivated me. I was like, you know what? Time to launch the website. We just got to do this. Cause again, it'd been about a year and a half and I've been applying to these jobs that I didn't want. And I was like, you know what? I need to try to bet on myself instead of betting on trying to get this job that I'm not really wanting anyway. So I lucked out, got blessed, whatever you want to call it, because one of my good friends was a property manager. And I think I like launched the website on a Monday. She calls me up on Wednesday and says, "Hey, you do real estate, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Great, we just fired our attorney, so I want to bring you in to my boss and, you know, see if we can have you come on." So it was a family-owned real estate company. It's two brothers. They had a lighting company, and they basically had contracts with all the hotels and casinos in Vegas for lights. So Wow. Think of all the lights there.
Yeah.
So one brother ran the light part, and then another brother took that money and invested into real estate. And so I got that client. It was my first client. That client is what kept me fed for, you know, the first year or two while I'm building out my client base. And then it slowly grew from there. But yeah, it was... People ask, you know, would you do it again or what do you recommend? And I'm like looking at it now, I'm like, oh yeah, because I've landed well now, but it took a long time to get there. And so kind of to your point, talking about how a lot of businesses fail, I still am a firm believer, and a lot of people have said this too. I think it's just the businesses fail because you stop. If you just keep, because you're going to get those hard times and those things where you feel in your gut that you should stop. The businesses that succeed are the ones where they push through those moments where you're feeling like you should stop. Because yeah, there was many times where I'm, you know, checking the mailbox like every couple hours because I got rent due in 2 or 3 days and I'm waiting for some checks for clients. And if those don't come through, I'm not going to be able to make it. So times like that to where, you know, I was talking with somebody the other day. I was like, you know, when I started out, it's interesting how much it's changed, because at first I was trying to see, you know, can I feed myself? And now I've got like 4 or 5 employees. And so I was like, it's weird. I still have the stress. I'm like, I got to make payroll, and it's not that it's an issue, but it's like, cool. Now I'm like, not only can I feed myself and my wife, but now I'm like, can I feed these other 5 families, which is kind of cool. And, you know, if you had asked me that 10 years ago, I would have never thought something like that was going to be happening.
Definitely, man. That's amazing. It definitely sounds like it was a turning point around the time when the job didn't work out and you just had to figure it out. And it sounds like that experience in New York, it was a turning point for sure. Cause you're like, wait a minute, if they could do all this and give me this, like, what could I do if I just take a chance and try to figure it out on my own? So, you know, I think that's incredible. And you did talk about some of those hard times. I would love to hear some more of that. Cause you mentioned sometimes just like, you know, hoping client checks come in so you can pay your bills and do what you need to do. What other challenges have you experienced over the last 10 plus years that you know have helped you to continue to persist and grow?
I don't know why this actually popped into my head when you thought that, but so this is actually more of kind of a almost like a moral dilemma. So thankfully now I've niched down and focused. So that's one thing that I would recommend to any entrepreneur is not necessarily super niche focus, but have a focus. Moving around a whole lot makes it harder for you to grow because you're doing so many things. But when I started out in law, we say I was practicing door law. Basically anything that came to the door is I would handle. Mm-hmm. And so I had a client that was pretty regular and mainly business stuff, but then I also would handle small litigation matters for him. And yeah, he just was not a very ethical person, not like extremely immoral, but just there were things that I kind of just started to be like, you know, I can't do that. So there's one time, for instance, that I ended up saving him about 90 grand that he should have owed, but due to just the letter of the law, he didn't actually owe it. But I'm like, you know that you should pay that person. And so that happened. There was another time. And so that was the first thing where I was like, oh, this doesn't feel right, but technically the law is there, but didn't feel right. And then there's another time where it was a carpet company. It's like a mom and pop carpet company. And this client owned a hotel and the person had redone like a floor of the carpet or something like that. And my client still owed them, I don't know, like 30, 50 grand, something like that. And he was like, their attorney like reached out to me and said, hey, can you know we get this settled? Can they pay? It's an outstanding invoice. And so I tell my client, and my client was like, tell him we'll give him $10,000. And I'm like, why? He's like, just because that's all I want to give to him. And I was just like, but I'm looking at the contract here, and it says you owe, and you paid part of it, and you haven't paid all of it. And he's like, yeah, just tell him I'll give $10,000. That's all I'm going to give, or he can sue me. And he basically knew that the guy really couldn't afford to sue him, and so he just kind of took advantage of him like that. And so that's when I actually had to fire that client. Cause, and even though I needed that client, but I was just like, yeah, you know, I can't, I can't do that. Cause you know, I was trying to picture myself, you know, what if I'm that small business and somebody's doing that same thing? Cause if somebody owed me at that time, somebody owed me money, I wouldn't have had the war chest to sue them either. And so things like that, you know, it was hard because I was still struggling. That was still at a time where I'm checking the mailbox for rent and like just making it, and cutting off this client that is a regular money that I was getting in was tough. But that's one of the things that, you know, I'm happy about, that I, you know, didn't quote unquote sell my soul. Some people do. I'd say just know what your prices or what your limits are, because there might be those times where you're pressured or tested to do things that may not jive with what your personal ethos is.
Definitely. No, I'm glad you mentioned that. In your experience, have you seen just generally like a lot of people who will do stuff like that just because they know, like try to give somebody a crumbs because they know they wouldn't be able to face them in court, like they wouldn't be able to last through the whole litigation process and stuff?
It's definitely out there for sure. Or even sometimes it's just, oh, you want to sue? Great. I'm going to make this very expensive for you so that you just can't win. Because, yeah, I don't litigate it now. Yeah. But a lot of times litigation is just a war of attrition. Who has the war chest to fight it long enough to stay and last versus who is kind of getting edgy and just ready to get rid of it and wants to settle now?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you mentioned also doing what you said, door law. Right. Yeah. So at what point did you choose a focus, and was that focus always real estate, or how did you figure out, all right, this is going to be what my firm focuses on?
So the focus always was business and real estate. Yeah. Actually, in law school, it's weird because I really enjoy the topic of law. Mm-hmm. But after the first year, that's the hard year, and I got through it, did pretty well. But I was just like, I don't really know that I want to, like, I don't want to be in court every day and doing that stuff. But I also was like, I've already finished the first year, which is the hard year. I've got on all this debt. So I got to make something out of this. But thankfully I took a class called Entrepreneurship in the Law. And so it's talking about the legal aspects of, you know, businesses and, you know, the security stuff I talked about and that sort of stuff. And I was like, yeah, that's the stuff I want to be doing. So after the first year, I focused on business and real estate classes, and then just dove in at when I graduated and had all that time, was just reading all the practice guides, all the treatises, all the books to just really learn that stuff. So that was always the focus. But when you're starting out, you know, you can have your focus, but if somebody says, hey, I need this, and I was like, yeah, I can figure that out. So you know, at the time, I was like, I just had to do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, business and real estate had always been the focus. And I'd say probably maybe after about 3 or 4 years, I was really able to kind of hone in on that more, just because I had a bit more of clients to where I can now focus on the area I wanted to versus trying to take whatever I can to scrape rent and meals together kind of thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
This summer, discover American Giant's timeless, high-quality clothing made right here in the USA. Every piece is designed for quality and style that's built to last. From vintage-style tees to tough tank tops, breathable polos to lightweight sweatshirts, you can find your perfect fit. Celebrate American craftsmanship and support local communities with every stitch. Go to American-Giant.com and use promo code STAPLE20 for 20% off your first order.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.